Ahoy, mateys! Welcome to the GameBuoy.org video game podcast, your twice-monthly port of call for gaming news and views that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. I'm your host, Captain Spike, and with me, as always, is First Mate Slagkick.
Yar!
Today is June 21st, 2015, and this is episode 85, E3 Wrap-Up. Welcome, once again, our lovely and beautiful listeners, to another episode of the GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
This week, we're wrapping up our E3 2015 coverage.
Can I get an E3 wrap-up with spinach and a sun-dried tomato tortilla?
Okay, that sounds super good. We are wrapping up our week of coverage by taking a last look retrospectively at sort of the events that took place, as well as pointing out a few little news stories that we thought you might want to hear about. So stick with us for the next, this will probably be a short one, maybe 30 minutes or so.
And, we say that.
Right.
3 hours later.
And as ever and always, hopefully you guys will enjoy listening as much as we will enjoy talking. Slaggy, do you want to start up our news bits?
Yeah, over on Polygon, the folks over there featured a look at the Guitar Hero Live and Guitar Hero TV feature of that game particularly. And, I mean, it's pretty interesting. I try to remain objective as much as I can, but I didn't realize that it was going to be more like a MTV that you can, like, drop in and play. And then there's also, like, you know, subscription, not a subscription-based model, but, you know, you can buy tracks that are available on streaming on demand at any time. But the thing is that it's going to basically be an always online game, which, I mean, I guess these days is like, you know, you can kind of automatically assume that most gamers are going to be online, but, you know, that's been kind of a controversial topic. And the thing is that they changed the way that, you know, DLC is going to work.
Well, it's because effectively there's not actually DLC.
Yeah, it's not DLC because it's stream content. You know, so if you have an internet outage or something, then you're like, oh, I wanted to play my favorite Pixies song that's on Guitar Hero TV, then you couldn't do that. Or you can just go play Rock Band. But, you know, to Activision's credit, they're really trying to make this a different experience, so kudos to that.
And, you know, you're editorializing here a little bit. I don't necessarily see as big of a problem with this. I do think that paying money for streaming licenses kind of sucks. But at the same time, you know, the game is going to have in-game currency similar to, you know, how a lot of free-to-play games work. And you are going to be able to use the in-game currency, not real money, but in-game currency, to purchase individual plays of these songs.
Yeah.
And I think that's actually, like, a really great innovation. I think that's a great take on this. If I maybe just once want to play Fall Out Boy, My Songs Know What You Did in the Dark, you know, okay, I pay, you know, 50 in-game currency or whatever, play it once. I'm never going to want to play it again. I didn't just spend real money on that. I actually think that this is potentially a great system.
Almost like a DLC rental, if you will. I know it's not actually DLC, but it's
But for the sake of discussion, that's a fine way to talk about it.
Right, like, oh, that note chart was ass. I'm not going to spend real Earth monies to have that streaming to me at any time.
Well, exactly. I think that that's potentially really cool. The game is going to be launching on PS3, PS4, Wii U, Xbox 360, and Xbox One on October 20th. And, you know, again, I'm actually really excited, and, you know, I know Slaggy was talking about how the game's effectively always on, but it is very important to mention all of the on-disc songs will be fully playable offline.
That's true.
So, you know, I have to say I'm personally impressed by this. I think that Activision and Freestyle Games are trying new things in a way that is actually fairly user-friendly. And overall, you know, I'm really here for it. I'm very hopeful. And
yeah, if it goes well, maybe they'll bring back DJ Hero.
Yeah, we can certainly.
Well, they were talking about, they specifically mentioned in the article about how, you know, that was a challenge for DJ Hero, that they really wished that they had been able to offer content like this for DJ Hero, but back then there was not a majority of consoles were always connected to the internet, so.
Well, and you know, part of the thing here is something that's come up a lot in discussions about Rock Band 4 is Harmonix has been opening up a lot more about how difficult song licensing can be for DLC, and about how a lot of bands don't want to let the music out of their control. And I have to think that, like, this streaming option Guitar Hero is doing, that could actually be something that labels are more comfortable working with.
Yeah, and you know, it's also interesting to point out that they are going for the other consoles, the so-called last-gen consoles, which, fortunately, you know, we use kind of tied in with that because of processing and graphic power, blah, 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 whatever you want to say. But so that's good that, you know, people who haven't made the jump to Xbox or PS4 yet, and they really are having a desire for a new rhythm gaming experience, will be able to jump on this.
Yeah, right? So I definitely think there are multiple ways you can look at this, and I don't think they're all bad. Overall, I think it's exciting that someone is innovating in this space. I think that Guitar Hero was the one that really needed to innovate because...
What, you didn't like Warriors of Rock?
Rock Band was already solid as hell. Really, again, you know, iterating on perfection. Guitar Hero was the one that I think needed to experiment, and I'm glad that we now know for fact they are experimenting.
Yeah. That was more than we really needed to talk about Guitar Hero, I guess, though.
Yeah.
We also love rhythm games.
We also have word here that 2K Games is going to be doing a second season of content for Evolve. This will have 5 new characters and 1 new monster. And there will be a season pass for that. Conversely, the new Hitman game, per IO Interactive, will not have a season pass at all, despite the fact that the game is slated to have a ton of post-release support and content. Their goal really is to sort of ship a smaller product at release, and be a little bit more on the ground as far as doing iterative and, like...
Smaller, more frequent patches in the world of Blizzard?
Exactly that, and really focusing on what works for players so that they can sort of be a little more proactive on giving gamers the game they want, rather than, you know, charging people for products they haven't even played yet. I think it's really an interesting take, and something that's really funny to me is, you know, Evolve, as far as I know, has not been doing amazing. So I think it's interesting.
Yeah, I honestly forgot about it.
I think it's interesting that they're sticking with the season pass model, but I guess we'll see. Hitman is one I'm becoming increasingly excited about. So, moving on, we also have some more information about the world of Final Fantasy, including the fact that it's going to have an active time battle combat system.
Yeah.
The core gameplay is going to be basically described as Pokemon meets Final Fantasy, which, you know, I'm certainly super into. It's going to be a system, from the sound of it, somewhat similar to what we saw in Final Fantasy 13 2, where, you know, you collect and capture monsters to fight as party members.
I want a Cactar and a Chocobo.
Right?
Maybe not a Marbolo, though.
The game is going to have a whole complete story, and that story is going to involve settings and characters from other Final Fantasies, as we had all guessed.
Yeah.
So I'm definitely getting increasingly hyped for this game, and I just cannot wait to play it. Slaggy, do you want to take this next one?
Yeah, an interesting tidbit about Mirror's Edge Catalyst. You will not be able to use guns. In fact, EA said that Faith doesn't need guns. And so that's a really interesting twist. They want the combat to be about movement and flow. And it's nice to see not only, you know, this great franchise returning, but being like, nope, we don't need guns.
We also have word here that Tetsuya Nomura, when asked at E3 by Eurogamer's Aoife Wilson, about whether or not, you know, some fan favorite scenes from the Final Fantasy VII Remake will still be present, Honeybee Inn, Don Corneo, that kind of stuff. Nomura actually responded positively and, while laughing, said, please look forward to it. So it seems that we may not be seeing some of the stranger elements of Final Fantasy VII be removed after all.
I am so glad.
I'm not, but that's okay.
I mean, my thing is that, I mean, I guess, you know, all the Final Fantasies kind of have their sillier moments, but I think that, you know, this game really had a lot of silly moments that maybe in some ways do detract from the super serious story, but, I mean, for me, it's so much a part of the experience that, like, I don't know, like, just the idea of seeing it in a, you know, fully voice-acted HD 1080p game is like, yes!
We also have positive confirmation officially from Bethesda that Fallout Shelter will be available for Android in the next few months.
Udon Entertainment, which is not a noodle company, but rather a publisher in North America, has announced that it's going to...
A book publisher, let's be clear.
Yes. That it has licensed the Persona 4 manga, which was adapted by Shuji Sogabe, who I'm actually not familiar with that mangaka's work, but that is cool news because we all love Persona 4. Apparently Sagabe-san also does the Persona 3 manga.
Excellent, excellent. We also have word here of a new upcoming tactical JRPG for the PS4 and PS Vita in Japan called Grand Kingdom. It is a persistent online tactics RPG that includes player versus player, like, mercenary guild fights, where you can create, like, a whole guild to fight your friends online and, you know, like, do, like, a whole, like, territory opposing country metagame. The kind of stuff I'm super into. I'm literally talking about it only because this game is, like, perfect for me, and I really, really, really need it to come out in North America.
The next Pac-Man game is going to be a celebration of the level 256 glitch. And this is in celebration of the 35th anniversary of Pac-Man. Aw, happy anniversary, Pac-Man. And so Bandai Namco actually teamed up with Hipster Whale, who made Crossy Road. You know, very big deal these days. And the title is going to be called Pac-Man 256. It is an endless maze. It's like a kind of like a Pac-Man endless runner. And you're trying to, you know, eat the dots and not get eaten by ghosts, of course. But you're also trying to not get consumed by the glitch.
And for those of you who aren't familiar with all of this is about, 255 is typically the highest an unsigned integer can be in programming. And so when you get to level 256 of the original Pac-Man game, the game doesn't know how to handle a level that high, and it ends up loading a corrupt board that it's basically the end of the game. It's considered the kill screen. Like, you're done playing, sorry, you're just not advancing any further. A lot of older arcade games, including Donkey Kong, had things like this, but I think it's really cute and neat to see Namco Bandai really embracing this and making a game around it. I think it's a great concept. And when it comes out this summer as a free-to-play game, I will absolutely be downloading it.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm not surprised. Bandai Namco is one of the few companies that actually does treat their IP well.
Well, last but certainly never, ever, ever least, we have word here that Square Enix president Yoichi Wada has officially left Square Enix. As of June 16th, his contract ended as the CEO of Square Enix, or I'm sorry, as the president. He actually stepped down from his role as CEO in June of 2013.
Right.
Wada-san has stated on his personal Facebook, you know, talking sort of about all of the things that he did with Square Enix and what he did to sort of advance the business as far as, like, getting MMORPGs running, getting HD remixes and remakes started up, getting free-to-plays out, including some that are not yet finished but will be coming out later, expanding on their Asian and cloud computing segments of the market, and, you know, he's actually going to be continuing working in that direction now as the CEO of Shinra Technologies.
Uh-oh, he took over Rufus's post?
No, this is the Shinra that is doing the streaming of games like Final Fantasy 13 to mobile and stuff. We've talked about
this. Oh, we know they're developing Sister Ray.
I guess so. Asai, do you have anything else?
No, just that I thought it was cute that he said, it's okay if you still refer to me as Wada of Square Enix, because it's kind of a household name like Nausicaa of the Valley of the Wind.
Okay, that's pretty endearing. All right, well, if we don't have anything else, it's time to discuss some stuff that is kind of
controversial.
Oh my god. Oh my god.
Right? Did you hear about the controversy regarding the new Konami music game?
Wait, Konami has a new music game?
I know, right? I forgot they even made music.
I forgot they even made games.
Ah, fair. Slaggy, do you want to tell our listeners about this one?
Yeah, so this game is called Musica. Musica. I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right. Apparently,
Musica.
It's getting a lot of comparisons to a game made by the American music game company, Unit E Technologies, not confused with Unity, called Neon FM. And, I mean, the funny thing is that, from what I can tell, Neon FM is kind of like a poppin' music clone, which, you know, was Bimani in the first place. But, I mean, that's kind of sad if Konami really did rip off a clone of their own game. You know, why not just put poppin' music back out?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, Musica is not quite a Bemani clone. It's not quite a Poppin clone. Poppin specifically is supposed to be, like, bright colors, pop songs, cute, like, anime songs and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
This is a little bit more, like, Bemani 2DX style music, like techno, you know, like, loud button clicky sounds and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
This is not what Musica is about. I do have to say, though, from a gameplay perspective, looking at Musica and Neon FM, they actually do look very similar in terms of gameplay. And it's just hard for me to side against Konami here, since Neon FM actually takes a lot of visual motif from Poppin music. Like, if you look at the in-game UI and stuff, it actually is very Poppin. So, it's ultimately, I side with Konami here, and I guess to some degree, I don't even know if it's appropriate, but like, it's just hard for me to hold anything against Konami as far as music game stuff goes, because they really, I mean, don't get me wrong, they mismanaged their brand, but they really created that genre in a lot of ways, and failed to get anything out of it.
Yeah. Regardless, there are some funny tweets over on Twitter. There is a picture of, it says, Secret Musica location test in NYC. It's a picture of a Neon FM machine. And there's a little comic that someone tweeted with Neon, like a little stick figure cutie thing of Neon FM saying, I made this, holding a Neon FM machine. And Konami is like, you made this? And then it's Konami's holding the Neon FM machine is like, I made this.
Yeah. In a little bit of sadder news, this is a little bit cut and dry, unfortunately. It's looking like Beyond Good and Evil 2 is probably not a thing anymore.
Yeah.
The most recent bit of news about this is that IGN apparently spoke with Ubisoft's senior vice president of sales and marketing, who was talking about how, you know, Ubisoft would love to do another game in the series. The crazy thing is, IGN took the article down and has not commented on why it was taken down. So, you know, a ton of different people from different sites, including GameSpot. I know Kotaku has tried to get some information. Basically, Ubi is not commenting on it at all. So, if you're a fan of Beyond Good and Evil, I certainly am. But if you are, you might want to, you know, keep your fingers crossed and, you know, maybe tweet at Ubi. Don't be rude, don't be a dick, but just, hey, I would really still like this game to exist so I can buy it.
Yeah, thanks. There's a lot of speculation that because Michel Ancel has his own studio that's kind of, you know, supported by Ubisoft, that he's not going to be doing this anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
For an example, did you have something to wrap up with that?
Well, no, I was just going to say about how much I think it sucks, that's all.
For an example of what not to do in terms of making your voice heard about games and such, do not sign a petition telling Nintendo to cancel Metroid Prime Federation Force. There is a petition on change.org that currently has 12,000 signatures saying the game looks atrocious.
Actually, that was 12,000 at the time of this article being written. It is now up to 19,241.
Oh, wow. It's basically saying that, you know, this is a disgrace of a game with the name Metroid slapped on it. And it's saying, look at the YouTube trailer. There's a 90% dislike to like ratio. I'm like,
yeah, but like, that's mostly you guys.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if this was some sort of Chan-related BS.
And meanwhile, you know, the thing that upsets me about this is that, you know, people from Nintendo have actually said that, you know, they do plan on returning to Metroid Prime, that they have plans for the series, but the goal here is to, you know, sort of expand on the game universe before Prime 4. And they've actually been very, very specific that they would view the next game as a sequel to the Prime trilogy, even if it didn't have the creature Metroid Prime in it. But that in order to get to that point, they need to establish some lore and sort of actually do world building, since really, if you think about it, Metroid doesn't have a whole lot of lore outside of Samus, the Chozo, and, you know, Zeebs and all that.
Mother Brain.
Mother Brain, yeah. So,
Baby Metroid.
Well, yes. But the point is, there's a very small amount of lore. They started building some in Prime 3 and Prime Hunters, and this is the next step in that direction. Unfortunately, you know, we have these gamers here who are, you know, I refuse to let them walk all over us with this game. Nobody wanted anything but a fucking Metroid soccer game. Samus isn't even in it. That's ignoring the fact that Samus has been confirmed to be in this new game. It's just, these people are taking this super personally, they're reacting in a really inappropriate way, and further, right this moment, this, to me, is actually a good angle for the Metroid franchise. We're talking about a series that has had two flops in the recent past. Of course, I'm talking about Other M, which sold way below expectations, and Metroid Prime 3, a game that was super, super, super well-loved by critics, but failed to set the sales charts alight. And it was by far, you know, the lowest selling game of the Metroid Prime series.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, a smaller budgeted game with a game design that would be more likely to be successful in the current gaming climate makes a lot of sense. And to see these people acting like this is actually really upsetting to me. And I just hope that Nintendo doesn't, you know, take it too seriously.
Well, I hope that Nintendo doesn't be like, we're still releasing, you know, Federation Force, but, you know, we're not going to give you another Metroid because this is how you act. I don't think they would. I don't think Nintendo is that way, but, you know, it's just really, I'm trying to think of any other sort of entertainment genre or, you know, medium like television, comics. I mean, I'm not an expert, you know, in other areas, but it seems like gamers seem to have this sort of entitlement. Or they feel like they have this sort of entitlement that they can communicate this way, and it's really toxic.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I think it's super toxic, and this is just a real damn shame. Last, and, you know, not least, there is sort of a weird issue with Devil's Third. You may remember, of course, this is the Tobunobu Itagaki-san game. It's supposed to be published by Nintendo after, you know, sort of dying. Nintendo pulled a Bayonetta, revived it, financed it as a Nintendo exclusive that they would publish. Right before E3, the game received release dates in the EU territories and Japan, but Nintendo of America has been completely silent about the game, not responding to any questions about it, no presentation or presence at E3, including the Treehouse live streams and the digital event. And you may recall, Devil's Third was featured last year at E3, including like a 40-minute Treehouse live focus. So it was kind of a big deal. A lot of people were very concerned about what the current status of the game is. Itagaki-san posted on Facebook, "Everybody, please calm down. I will do it," which people are assuming in his, somewhat broken English, implies that the game is still coming. The only real info we have is that Gamefly, the by-mail video game rental company, still has the game slated on their release calendar as an August 28th release in North America, and they have actually been extremely reliable on release dates. They've actually been one of, like, the prime ways that North American release dates get leaked.
Hmm.
So, we've talked about them here on Rumor Has It quite a few times, actually.
Yeah.
So, you know, fingers crossed, hopefully this game's still coming. I'm really looking forward to it, and I'm gonna be very disappointed if Nintendo pulls a Disaster on us. Because if you recall, Disaster was a Monolith Soft game for the Wii. It got a Japanese release and an EU release, completely localized in English, but it never got a North American release, despite having been featured at E3 in years prior to its release. My understanding is it's actually a pretty fun game, but I don't actually know that because I haven't played it.
Womp womp.
Womp womp.
Oh, and speaking of womp womp, I think you forgot a news article.
Did I? Oh my gosh, I did. I must have somehow missed opening.
Must have jiggled your tabs around or something.
So, apparently, and this has been a big deal, you know, quite a few fighting game commentators and a lot of the social justice voices out there have made a big fuss about a GIF floating around of Chun-Li from Street Fighter V with ridiculous breast jiggle physics. Like, we're talking about, like, Dead or Alive 2 set with your age as being 255.
Wait, you could do that? 255?
Yeah. Yep, and the game's jiggle physics would be super, super, super exaggerated. But Capcom has actually gone on the record saying this is actually a bug, normally speaking, and why we haven't seen the entire world blow up about this, is that, you know, Chun-Li's breasts have actually, like, a really good physics simulation. They stay in place, very little movement and bounce, just, you know, very subtle and appropriate. They say that this is a glitch. It only happens on the second player side of specifically the E3 build, and that it is going to be fixed, like, before the
home release.
Yeah,
and they even showed for comparison over on Kotaku that when player one is Chun-Li, there is not jiggling, but Cammy even had a little bit of jiggle compared to her player one side.
Yeah, and, you know, again, it's just, it's one of those glitches that for whatever reason, the female character on the player two side of the versus matchup screen has physics that go a little wacky on their breast simulation. It's funny, but this is the kind of thing that happens. It is not an intentional design, and it will be gone before the game comes out. So, everyone, you can put your pitchforks down. This is not a real thing. It did happen, but it's not a thing. It's being fixed. They know, and they are not letting it through.
Good.
All right. Well, that's all of our news updates. So, let's move on to the discussion. We're just real quick here going to take a look at the 7 main events of this year's E3. We're going to talk, you know, with the benefit of hindsight, since we've had a week to sort of think about all this stuff. I want to talk about, you know, just sort of what we thought in general about these events, talk about what we're most looking forward to from the events, and then we are going to assign a letter grade. But I want to say right now, and I'm saying this for our listeners as well as for you, Slaggy, this is not a competition. Everyone can have A's, everyone can have B's, everyone can have F's. We're not trying to find out who won E3. I don't really think that's a super valuable metric.
Right.
I just want to know, sort of, within sort of the vacuum, looking at it in the vacuum of Bethesda, for example, how do you think Bethesda did?
Oh, are we starting now?
No, I was just setting the criteria. So with that having been said, Slaggy, let's talk about Bethesda. With the benefit of hindsight now, a week later, what did you think of their showing?
You know, I thought it was pretty solid. There were a few things that were like, LOL, really? Mostly like the Elder Scrolls card game where they didn't show any of the cards. But, you know, I thought when they did show games, they showed a lot of, like, you know, the features, and they showed gameplay. Like Doom, they really showed, like, you know, a lot of detail and gameplay, and they showed the snap maps. Fallout 4, of course, they showed a lot about the functionality of it. And I think that, you know, maybe they didn't have as many games as some of the other companies did, but what they showed was pretty solid and in-depth.
Excellent. Well, and that's good. Is that overall, is that your thoughts?
Yeah, in terms of looking back at it.
Okay, excellent, excellent. You know, for me, where what you're saying really shows is with, like, the Fallout 4 presentation, where we really saw a ton of the mechanics, we saw a ton of the game world. You know, I like the Fallout series, but I'm not, like, a mega fan. But for Fallout 4, like, I could see myself going, like, full crazy for this game.
Mm-hmm.
I was really impressed by what we saw. I think the game mechanics look great. And to me, that was how you present a game. It felt like the Nintendo style, you know. We saw the game. We saw the game concepts and the game design concepts. We saw, you know, why the game is the way it is. We got to hear from people involved in the creation, talk, you know, about their personal experiences making the game and why they made those design decisions. I was really impressed. I think that Bethesda, for their first conference, knocked it out of the park.
Oh, was this their first ever in the history?
I believe so.
Oh, wow.
Knocked it out of the park, I would say. Slaggy, what are you most looking forward to that we saw from Bethesda in the coming year?
Fallout 4.
Yeah, well, it probably goes without speaking that I feel the same way. And what letter grade would you assign them for this event? Keeping in mind, first-time presenters.
Probably like an A-, honestly, just because of the strength of the presentation. No one up there was super awkward and like, hey, Bethesda bros and babes! You know, like, PlayStation Nation.
Yeah.
You know, and like what they did show was pretty solid. You know, a couple areas of, you know, mostly in the Elder Scrolls region were kind of like, but, you know, otherwise, definitely showed off some things that looked great. The people up there weren't super awk or anything. They didn't have any major flubs. There were no giant enemy crab situations, unintentional LOL. So yeah, I think A-.
Awesome. I want to go off track here for just a minute and ask you what you think personally. There was a little bit of a controversy during the Bethesda presentation. Anita Sarkeesian had posted about how she felt that it was a shame that the E3 presentations were starting off with like a focus on hyper-violent masculinity. Do you have an opinion there?
You know, I feel like when we were watching this live, I was like, oh, LOL, guns and explosions, bro. But then, you know, I think they really made up for it by showing Dishonored 2 with the, you know, badass female protagonist in that game. And, you know, then Fallout 4 being able to play as a female protagonist and, like, fully customizable and everything. And so I think, you know, I was maybe a little bit, I don't know if I would say concerned, but I kind of was like, oh, really, Bethesda? Except that, you know, they weren't just relying on guns and explosions. They're like, oh, look, we really want people to, you know, be creative with this. You know, yes, Doom is a very violent game, but, you know, I guess, I mean, my thing is that, yes, it's very violent, and I guess there could be a lot of arguments for, like, it being hyper-masculine or, like, toxic masculinity, but I would say at least you're shooting demons from hell on Mars, or from Mars on hell. I can't really figure that out yet.
On Mars from hell.
Okay, that's what I thought. Then, you know, it's not like you're shooting other people.
Yeah, I actually agree with you. I do always think that it's worth having these kinds of discussions. And, you know, certainly I do think that it is interesting and a little bit of a shame that we did start off the E3 event with, you know, guns, 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 shooty, shooty, bang, bang. But at the same time, you know, that is what gaming is. I think it's worth looking and thinking about, certainly. But I don't hold it against Bethesda. I don't hold it against E3. I don't hold it against the industry. That is where we are. That is what sells. This is a business. And, you know, I do think that progress is being made in a very real way.
I think there is still a place for games like that. Just, you know, as long as these conversations are being had and other voices are being included. And, you know, I find something like Doom personally a lot less offensive than something like, you know, a Grand Theft Auto, where it's like, you know, you go in and you can run over sex workers and things like that. So, of course, I also have male privilege, so I really maybe don't have a right to be talking about that, but we're kind of, you know, maybe getting a little off track here for the purpose of today's topic.
I don't know that we are. Again, since this is something that was said about E3.
No, I agree. I'm just saying I don't want to sidetrack into, you know, because I really feel that issues of gender representation and feminism and all that deserve their own platform, you know, and not to, you know, just kind of just try to squeeze it in.
All right. Well, I mean, I feel you there. Let me wrap this up then. For me, I would give Bethesda a solid A. And in fact, I'll be honest, I'm almost tempted
to... You're an easy creator.
I'm almost tempted to give them an A+. Truly, for a first-year event, it's hard to imagine how they could have done better. I do think if they do events annually from here moving forward, that it will get better. But for a first-year conference, it was better than I had any right to expect. I was expecting a shit show, frankly. And they knocked it out of the park, really. Just a great presentation.
Yeah, I think...
Great games first focus. And, you know, the one minor flub, really, was that they showed some concept art for that card game with no actual context of what the card game was going to be.
But is that really... I guess looking at the entirety of E3, was that really the worst, quote-unquote, crime committed?
Oh, heavens no. It's just, if I had to pick nits about
That's what I'm saying. I was saying, you know, kind of just in general. And, you know, I think what really, you know, what deserves a lot of credit on Bethesda's part is that this is a company that I typically don't pay a lot of attention to. And now I'm like, okay, I'm paying attention. So, I mean, I think in that's where I'm giving them, you know, the A range of grades.
Excellent. Excellent. All right. Well, let's move on then to the next conference, and that was Microsoft. So, now that you've had a week to think about it, what did you think of Microsoft's presentation?
I'm just really happy to see Microsoft having kind of come back, not from the dead, I mean, because that's really harsh, but, with the Xbone launch, you know, not even the launch, just the Xbone initial announcement, that was really rough for them, and I really feel like...
Girl, that really was a rough
spot. But, you know, they put out an album and a t-shirt, no, I'm just kidding, wrong podcast. But I feel like, you know, they had a solid slate of games, they were pretty confident in their presentation of it. I think there's some great-looking titles coming. you know, it's always a little bit different when it's the hardware companies, you know, that also have software in-house, but it's something different. Like, we're just talking about Bethesda games. Just talking about Bethesda games. With Microsoft, they have to cover a whole slew of things, so, which can be good and bad. I mean, maybe not bad, but, you know, so I think that, I'm just really happy to see that they had a variety of things. They had, you know, it wasn't just like coming eventually.
Yeah.
It's like stuff that's going to be coming soon, that's going to be played. We'll be able to play it soon in the next year or year and a half. And it had some pretty good stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Plus, you have stuff like, you know, the bombshell that was the backwards compatibility thing.
Right.
And I have to be honest, Microsoft, I actually have sort of changed tunes. Earlier in the week, I was so wowed with Sony, who I just realized I left off of my show roll notes, Slaggy.
Oops.
Be aware, we are talking about Sony, we're not gonna skip them. But yeah, when I was stuck up in the glamour and flash of Sony's event, I had said that I thought Sony out-edged Microsoft, but I don't really know that I still feel that way. I do think Sony had a hell of a presentation, we're gonna get to that, but Microsoft, I thought, gave us a very solid presentation, a good focus of, like, what's coming in the next 6 months, and what's coming, you know, in 12 months, 18 months. Plus, you know, obviously, like I said, there was the bombshell that is backwards compatibility, which, as we've learned since their conference, you know, that it's actually, you know, gonna be very widely supported. As long as a publisher signs off on their game being included, there's no work involved or money involved on their end. It's just, basically, they just have to sign off on the game being backwards compatible, and that's
right.
It. Like, this is potentially huge. As long as publishers choose to play ball, and I truly hope they do, you know, we're actually gonna see a lot of really great stuff come from this, and that's awesome! So I overall, really just super excited for Microsoft's presentation.
Yeah.
Slaggy, what did we see that you're most excited, you're most looking forward to?
You know, I don't think I can choose just one. I think I really like the indie games they highlighted, you know, the Cuphead, Tacoma, Ashen, and Beyond Eyes. Like, you know, I don't want to, you know, trash on Sony, but I'm thinking back to last year where Sony's like, indie sizzle reel. It was just kind of like all these indies, which is great that they had them, but, you know, even though maybe we didn't get to see quite as much, and, you know, for example, we saw more from Beyond Eyes in the PC presentation, but, you know, I'm really looking forward to all of those indie games, and I like that they spotlighted those. Gigantic looks really interesting. And ReCore, I'm really excited to see more. I mean, there's not a lot that I couldn't really gather quite a lot from it, but I'm really interested in seeing more of that. The Rare collection, too. I'm really, you know, we've talked about how it's going to have the actual Conker's Bad Fur Day Uncensored, that, you know, there's some little cheats and tricks and stuff, so it really sounds like they're doing a nice job with that Rare collection.
Yeah, absolutely.
And backwards compatibility, but I figure we're kind of focusing more on games, because we're game booey.
Well, I actually, you know, the big thing I'm looking forward to, Full Tilt, is the backwards compatibility.
Yeah.
I am looking forward to, you know, hopefully being able to continue playing the Mass Effect trilogy on my Xbox One, playing Metal Gear Rising. Mm-hmm. I mean, just, there's a whole wealth of
games. It makes
me
glad that I primarily got multi-platform games on the 360, because,
Well, me too. If they can pull this off, and we have every reason to believe that they're gonna make it work, if they can pull this off, it really does validate, you know, the choice of many of us to stick with the Xbox platform for our multi-plats last gen.
It'll be interesting to see if Rock Band gets the okay.
Well, they have said that games that involve specific peripherals will not be supported.
Oh.
So that really, yeah, that will break it for Rock Band. But, you know, I'm still super excited here, and I almost wonder if they won't use some similar software solution for downloading DLC for Rock Band 4, because apparently the games that are up on the preview, because, you know, there's the preview that we talked about last week when
right.
We were talking about this, that already has access to a handful of titles for backwards compatibility. Apparently, if you already owned DLC, you can easily re-download it already.
That's nice.
And so it's hard to imagine that there's not some connection here to how that pipeline is going to be working for Rock Band on the Xbox platform, mm-hmm. for me, at least.
You know, I'm personally really excited to hopefully play through the Assassin's Creed 2 trilogy again.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Stuff like, you know, the Xbox Live arcade ports of Rez HD. I don't want that lost to the times. Stuff like the Castlevania Symphony of the Night. It would be great to be able to play that on my Xbox One.
And it makes me feel okay about, you know, the fact that my 360 is kind of packed up right now. I don't have room for it, so it makes me feel like, okay, you served a good life. Now you can kind of enjoy a trophy display, so to speak.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was funny because we didn't talk about it in news because it's not really like OMG news, but Suikoden 3, did it hit already or it's just
hitting? No, it's going to be hitting this week on PSN.
And I was just thinking, like, oh, I really wish I could play PSN stuff on my PS4, like Suikoden 3 in 1 and 2 and, like, all that stuff. I'm like, oh, but I still got to keep my PS3 hooked up for a while.
Yeah, and, you know,
I guess for a lot of people, maybe it's not that big of a deal, but I have limited real estate in terms of my home entertainment center. My TV still only has 2 HDMI ports, so as it is, I already had to get, like, a little switcher thing just so I could have, like, Wii U and PS3 and PS4 and Xbone at the same time.
Yeah. You know, for me, just a big part of all of that is I can understand that we may not get PS3 support on PS4 just because the cell architecture, you know, the cell chip was super specific, super hard to program for. You really had to program for to the metal to make the most out of it. And a lot of people did, especially in the later years. But when you look at the stuff that was being done via software emulation, the PS1 classics, the PS2 classics, of which Suikoden 1, 2, and 3 all fall under, I have a difficult time believing that they couldn't get software emulation up and running on the PS4, for the PS1 in particular.
Either that or take another look at PS Now, but, I mean, this isn't Sony, so
I'll be honest, I hate PS Now. I tried to use it, and even though it worked mostly all right, like, it would have been fine for a JRPG or a party game, for the kind of games I play that are typically very demanding, you have to do, like, frame counting and, like, split-second reactions, it was just, there was a little bit of lag, and that's too much for me. Like, if I can't adequately parry in Metal Gear Rising, if I can't do correct, you know, counters in Street Fighter 4 or Guilty Gear, then I don't care. I don't care.
Who cares?
Exactly. So, anyway, Slaggy, what letter grade would you give Microsoft?
What letter grade? What letter grade? You know, I would probably give them kind of like on the cusp of an A- or a B+. Like,
I'm actually right there with you. I think I'm going to go B+. For me, the big negative here was we didn't hear anything about Phantom Dust. And if that is lost to the ages and dead, like truly dead, I will fucking cry forever.
Right. And, you know, I kind of feel like the HoloLens presentation was a little bit of, you know, not false advertising, but I think, like, I've heard everything pointing to it being that it needs more time in the oven. So kind of just like, you know, I think maybe is that truly like what it looks like right now, or, you know, is it, I don't know. It's just a little bit of eh. So I'd say like a B+, which I would still be like, that's a really good grade. But then Microsoft's like kind of a perfectionist is like crying because it got a B+ instead of an A-.
All right. Well, let's talk about Ubisoft. Benefit of hindsight. Do anything for you?
Not really. You know, I think in benefit of hindsight makes me actually think lesser of it.
That's fair. I'm actually kind of there with you. I mostly feel like I kind of wasted my time watching it. Like, I was not that impressed overall with what we saw.
It was embarrassing, honestly.
And yeah.
And that's a trend for them. It's not like it's like, oh, suddenly embarrassing. And I feel bad for Aisha Taylor, you know, trying to keep things together, but, you know, Aisha Taylor is not enough to save Ubi's conferences when Ubi is just like, you know, not doing a lot with what they have.
Yep, that's pretty much where I'm at. So, tell me, Slaggy, of the things that you saw that you might be interested in, what are you looking forward to most from Ubi?
I don't know, I mean, I guess Assassin's Creed Syndicate, if it's not a total crap show. I like the fact that you can play as a female assassin. That's awesome. But I'm just trying to think, like, what else do they have? They have, like, 3, you know, Tom Clancy's, which, I mean, maybe people really like that. But I just don't really care. I'm like, kind of like, who cares? I mean, maybe you'll mention something, I'll be like, oh yeah, they're doing that too.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to South Park Fractured Butthole.
Yeah.
But that's mostly just so I can talk about it and refer to the title. I'm, you know, I don't have a lot to positive to say about Ubi's conference. Overall, Slaggy, what letter grade would you give him?
Probably C. A very low C, on the verge of being a C minus.
Yeah, I would actually give them a D plus. I, overall, very little I was interested in. I thought the presentation was really boring, frankly. I thought it dragged. They didn't show a lot I was excited for. I just would not rewatch. Right.
I mean, I'm kind of interested a little bit in For Honor. A little bit of the Trials Fusion. I mean, but the Trials Fusion was only just, you know, here's a little DLC. Anno 2205 looks kind of neat, but, I mean, they didn't really talk about it that much, so they spent all the time on Tom Clancy.
Well, and that's kind of my point, is they dragged, they didn't focus on the strong, interesting stuff.
Oops, kind of like me.
It was just focus on big-name AAA garbage that we all already know about, because it's the exact same in every iteration of your annual franchise. And I'm
that's their
it.
Big problem. And can we talk about that embarrassing, I'm like, not Bruno Mars, Jason Derulo. Ugh, that embarrassing performance for Just Dance promo.
Yeah. All right, well, moving on to EA. You know, and this was one that for me was actually a little bit of a surprise. You know, now that I've thought about it, at the time, I was really stuck on, like, oh my god, the sports part dragged so much. I was so bored. This was awful. But the more I think about it, like, some of the EA stuff is what I most have thought about in the last few days. Stuff like Battlefront, Mirror's Edge Catalyst,
right.
Knights of the Fallen Empire, Mass Effect Andromeda,
hey.
Plants vs. Zombies Garden Warfare 2, Unraveled, even Need for Speed is one I'm going to pick up. So EA is actually one that I think the benefit of hindsight has really helped me turn around on. I'm interested, Slaggy, in what you think.
Yeah, you know, I think really the weak spot for me as well was the fact that, you know, I almost wonder if they had done the sports kind of spread out a little more. It just always feels like every year they do the sports in a big sports block, and I think that's really where it starts to drag.
Yeah, and for me, of course, you know, and I talked about that here on the show, a big part of the problem for me is that I'm just not that interested in the sports games that they do. There are sports I'm interested in, but it's not the ones that they're doing games for. That's my big problem with EA.
Yeah.
Anyway, so, like, what are you most looking forward to that we saw at this conference?
Unravel looks really cute. I thought that Yarny was adorable. And when he was like, I brought him here with me, hi, and then got super embarrassed. Mirror's Edge looks great. You talked about Battlefront, Mass Effect, even though it was just a trailer. I need more of it. Old Republic expansion.
Yeah, I think that one looks great.
So, I mean, there's definitely, you know, despite the sports, not even to be sports ball about it. It's just that, you know, the presentation of it is a little dry, it seems always.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, well, overall, what kind of letter grade would you give them with the benefit of hindsight?
I would say, if I could, I might want to change my Ubisoft to more like a C-minus now, when I'm, like, you know, looking.
Again, we're looking at them in a vacuum. We are not comparing grades.
Yeah, no, but I'm a teacher,
We have moved on from Ubisoft.
I know, but
we have moved on from Ubisoft.
Okay. So I would say B-minus. Their presentation can kind of sometimes be a little stiff or a little awkward. I mean, don't get me wrong. Like, I'm talking about the guy with Yarny being like, hello. But, I mean, it's kind of like, oh, boy. You know, sometimes the presentation's just a little bit like, LOL.
Okay, yeah. See, I feel that. I would actually, I guess I'm maybe a little bit more forgiving than you. I would give them a solid, like, C plus B minus.
Yeah, but I just said I would give them a B or B minus, so.
Oh, I totally thought you said C minus.
Oh, no. I said I wanted to change Ubisoft to a C minus because I'm like, oh.
Yeah, see, that's why I was like, let's not talk about Ubisoft. It just confuses things. We're on EA now.
Yeah, but.
But then it turns out I agree with you. Yeah, because, you know, Mass Effect, that's super exciting. Knights of the Fallen Empire, that's exciting. Mirror's Edge, that's exciting. And we saw a good mix of, like, what we're going to be playing this year from EA and what we're going to be playing next year. And
yeah.
That balance, to me, is something that's really important in an event like this. So I overall was pretty impressed, and I would give them, like I said, a C plus, B minus.
Yeah.
So Sony, and this I think is the one that for most people are finding that
Sony 183, oh.
Sony opinions have changed, or have not for a certain kind of fan. Slaggy, what did you think looking back at Sony?
I thought it was solid. You know, I think they were still focusing on certain titles a little too much that we saw enough of at E3 last year, such as Uncharted and No Man's Sky. But, you know, we got to see a couple of new things. We got that triple punch of OMGs that no one really ever thought we would ever see coming, let alone in the same E3 keynote. So,
yeah, absolutely.
What about you?
You know, Sony's conference for me, in retrospect, is a little bit of a mixed bag. There were definitely a lot of products and games that I fully intend on supporting. But my problem was all of the big stuff, all of, like, the key stuff. It was like, either we've already heard about this, or it's all stuff that we're not going to be seeing on the market until after next year's E3. Stuff like The Last Guardian.
Right.
Final Fantasy VII Remake, Shenmue 3, possibly even, like, World of Final Fantasy. certainly Uncharted 4. You know, it's just like, there was some cool stuff there. You know, Dreams is included in that. You know, we saw exciting stuff in the forms of, like, Hitman and Street Fighter V. You know, Firewatch looked somewhat interesting.
Yeah.
But for me, the big, really exciting stuff was so far out that it was like, it's hard for me to really stay hyped.
And is it just me, or, like, I'm having trouble remembering a lot about Morpheus. That was supposed to be the huge, like, focus, I thought.
Yeah, well, I mean, they showed us that World of Tunes game. They showed us that Riggs game, which actually people who were there and playing it said Riggs was actually hella fun, which is cool, but, like, I guess VR just doesn't really demo super well on a live stream. So, yeah, for me, hindsight was probably the worst to Sony, because last week, if you had asked me, I would have said Sony was the best presentation, and now I'm like, it was good, but it wasn't the best.
Yeah.
So, Slaggy, what are you most looking forward to that we saw at Sony's conference?
Horizon Zero Dawn, and honestly, the big three.
All right, yeah. For me, you know, it's probably Last Guardian and Street Fighter V. And, you know, I'm certainly excited for a lot of this other stuff. But then I think about it like, and Last Guardian's included in that. It's like, well, when am I going to get to actually play this? So it's hard, really hard for me to keep my hype going. And that for me is pretty bad. So Slaggy, what kind of letter grade would you give them?
Probably a B+.
That's fair. I would give them a solid B. Solid B. Great announcements, great energy, great excitement, but especially with a few days out, I'm just not feeling it as much.
Sony got their grade back from you, and they're like, I was sure I got an A+. So they're like a little bit miffed at you.
Next up, let's talk about Nintendo. And with the benefit of hindsight, I want to know what you thought, but we're going to do this a little differently with Nintendo, and if anyone else had done this, we would have done that for them too. I do want you to include the Treehouse stuff
right.
with your consideration of Nintendo.
Well, I mean, you hit it right there, the Treehouse stuff, and I feel like Reggie even was talking about this. We talked about, you know, the Iwata comment and how he said, no, that translation that's floating around is not accurate. He's just saying that, you know, that Nintendo always listens to feedback, not that, you know, they were trying to apologize for anything. And you really do have to take the Treehouse into consideration, because those really get to show more in depth than what they can show in a, you know, 1 hour presentation, which is, you know, kind of just trying to cover, you know, everything that they're announcing. I mean, you think back to things like Splatoon last year, which, you know, people were like, oh, Splatoon, huh? And now, you know, people love Splatoon. It's selling super well. You know, I mean, I don't know if it's that there's too many niche titles, like the, you know, the Shin Megami Tensei stuff, the Fire Emblem stuff, even though Fire Emblem was, like, super well-loved and stuff. You know, I know Animal Crossing was a big disappointment for a lot of people, but, you know, for me, well, like,
we've learned that Amiibo Festival Animal Crossing is a free-to-play game, that as long as you have the Animal Crossing Amiibo, you can download the game for free and play it to your heart's desire.
Yeah. You know, and I really think that, like, I even talked about this on our episode a couple days ago, watching the playthroughs on the Treehouse for things like Federation Force, Metroid Prime Federation Force and Happy Home Designer Animal Crossing. Like, I'm like, oh, okay, Yo-Kai Watch. Like, those all are games that I'm now definitely interested in picking up. And before I might be like, oh, I'll hold off on them. But now I'm like, definitely have a more vested interest in them.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I feel like, I mean, this is turning into me defending Nintendo, but Mario Maker, Super Mario Maker, I feel like people are not as excited about that. I'm really surprised. Like, to me, that's a huge deal, but I don't know.
Yeah.
Mario fanboy, something, something, something.
Well, then, why don't you tell me, what game are you most looking forward to that you saw at Nintendo's event?
Oh, wow, that's tough. I'm really excited to see more of Shin Megami Tensei X Fire Emblem, because it looks almost more like a Persona sort of experience, and, you know, that's super exciting for me. But, I mean, really, like, I'm actually really excited for Happy Home Designer, LOL, and Fire Emblem. Star Fox is actually probably one of the ones I'm a little less excited about, even though it still looks good. Like, that was, I know, their big announcement, but for me, it's some of the other stuff. And actually, Yo-Kai Watch,
for
too.
Context, have you ever been a huge Star Fox fan?
I've never been the biggest Star Fox fan, so no.
Okay, and that's fair. I just, again, context. For me, you know, the big ones are Shin Megami Tensei Cross Fire Emblem, which is now known presently as Gene Ibun Roku Sharp FE. I definitely super stoked for that, especially after watching the Treehouse, seeing that the combat system in-game is like a cross between Shin Megami Tensei, you know, Elemental Weakness Table, and, like, the Fire Emblem, like, triangle hierarchy of weaponry. Like, it really does look like it's taking the best of both worlds as far as the game mechanics go, and that's where I'm most interested.
And it's, like, about, like, Japanese idols and stuff.
I mean, that's whatever. I mean, it could be about bums fighting in a puddle of poop. As long as the combat mechanics are there,
I'm like, no, that's the next Conker title.
Right?
If only.
You know, Super Mario Maker's a big one for me, and Star Fox is a big one for me. I'm a huge Star Fox fan, so I'm actually stoked. I'm really, really excited, and especially, you know, watching the Treehouse footage of a lot of these games made me really excited. Even stuff that in the direct event only got maybe 15, you know, seconds of airtime, or, you know, I'm okay, probably more like 25 to a minute and a half, but basically everything after watching the Treehouse stuff, it was just like, dude, I'm super into this. There was also a Treehouse focus on Fatal Frame 5. That looked great. I really, looking back, you know, I thought Nintendo had a great lineup. I thought they were looking really good.
Mm-hmm.
So, Slaggy, letter grade for Nintendo?
So, at first, Nintendo hadn't completed their assignment on time, and they got a B. But then they finished it, and it was deserving of an A.
All right. Yeah, I'm going to probably give them a solid B. My biggest concern with Nintendo really is that we didn't see anything beyond 8 months out or so. And I know they have said that their goal was to show what's coming. I have praised them for showing what's coming. But I do want to know, at least a rough outline, what am I going to be playing on my Nintendo consoles in 8 months? And they did fail to answer that.
You mean beyond 8 months?
Well, yes, beyond 8 months.
Do you think that something like even if it was just a teaser trailer, a new teaser trailer for Zelda, that could have drastically changed the perception?
I do. I think that if they had shown literally Zelda and one other game, and it literally could have been just a damn title card with no game discussion, no graphical teases, just a title. If they had just given us something like New Paper Mario RPG, more information coming 2016, that alone would have
been
enough.
There is a New Paper Mario RPG.
I'm talking about for Wii U or 3DS, I don't really care, yeah. But just a little more information on what's coming next would have been nice. And then that's all. That's my real complaint with Nintendo, especially looking back. But I thought what they had there, what they had present, what they have coming out in the next 6 months all looks super good. I'm fully in.
Right, and their presentation is always solid, you know, and that's the benefit of the digital event.
Absolutely. Let's talk about Square Enix. What did you think?
Lots of good stuff to be shown. Unfortunately, too far off to really have too much of an investment in, even with things like Kingdom Hearts. And very, very dry presentation.
Yeah, that for me was my biggest issue with Square Enix. The presentation was super dry. Even when they were talking about stuff I was excited for, I tended to get bored watching it. So what are you most looking forward to that they showed?
Probably, you know, kind of in the themes that I expect to be coming out sooner rather than later. World of Final Fantasy looks really cute. I'm really excited to see more of the Project Setsuna, because, you know, it's definitely time for some fresh JRPG experiences. Well, I mean, like, you know, Kingdom Hearts Key, actually, I'm really excited that that seems to be coming pretty soonish. Do we have a release date on that yet?
We do not.
But, I mean, I assume it'll be coming pretty soonish. It looks like it was, you know, sooner rather than later. But, yeah, it's interesting. And even things like, you know, Hitman and Just Cause 3, you know, those also both look really good, but just the presentation was meh.
Yeah. I kind of there with you. Hard for me to be super invested. Like, I'm super excited that a new Nier game is coming. I'm super excited that Kingdom Hearts 3 is coming. I'm super excited that Final Fantasy VII Remake is coming. I'm super excited that Project Setsuna is coming. But these are all things we're going to see again at next year's E3.
Right.
So for me, the standout title is actually like Hitman, which I wouldn't have expected. But like I said, when we were talking about the Squeenix conference, like there was something about that concept and the trailer and the way the trailer sold the concept that I'm really interested in and I really want to see more of. So that's where it is for me. Letter grade, Swaggy?
B minus. I feel like it's like if this was an assignment, they would have thrown in like a lot of buzzwords, but not really had any actual substance to back it up.
Restate that letter.
B minus.
B, like boy.
B minus, boy, like the Zero Ranger.
All right, I'm actually going to go with D, like dog. I'm going to give them a D.
Wow.
This is like, if we were going to give it like a schoolwork thing, this is like a presentation that someone handed in on like super high grade card stock with a bunch of like fancy fonts and like a really great like slick presentation that just had all the information wrong. Like,
see,
they
I don't
tried.
Think the presentation was slick at all.
I'm not talking a one-to-one comparison here. I'm
okay,
saying
okay.
I'm saying they had games that were good to go. Their actual presentation was weak and they focused on stuff that is effectively vaporware. Like, I can see the argument for that having been an amazing conference. Everybody's losing their shit over Final Fantasy VII and Kingdom Hearts and Setsuna and Nier and you know, this and that and the
other.
I
feel like Rob Roberts said it best when...
But literally, all of these games are going to be shown not just at next year's E3,
but
these games are all probably going to be still shown at the E3 after that.
I asked Rob Roberts from Orange Lounge Radio, oh, what do you think about the teacups from Disneyland being in Kingdom Hearts 3? He said, I'll enjoy spinning on them in 2018.
Well, yeah, in real talk, that's what we're looking at here. Slaggy, this is like when you asked me if I really thought Final Fantasy Versus 13 was worth buying a PS3 for in 2012.
Oh, dear.
I'm sorry, more like 2009. And you were saying that you were going to do it, and I was telling you, like, you're not going to be playing that game until 2015. Or, I'm sorry, I think at the time I said 13, and then
no,
it
you
never
know,
came, and then I said 14,
that was,
then I said 15.
That was actually more around launch era, because you were like, no, you should get a 360, we all have 360s, you can play online with us. I'm like, no.
It has games now that you want to play.
And then a couple months later, I traded it in for a 360.
And we still don't have Versus 13.
That was more like 10 years ago.
Jesus. So that, for me, is my problem with Square Enix's presentation, was just too much sometime in the future. So yeah, no, I would give that a D.
Yeah, maybe at this point, Final Fantasy VII Remake will be for the 25th anniversary of the game.
Well, I mean, I'm just saying, real talk.
PlayStation 5.
How many Square Enix games have we seen get pushed back to other consoles because they've delayed so long? There's no guarantee.
Well, I mean,
that
I even remember like
here.
Final Fantasy 12 getting hella delayed. Like, that was 4 years delayed. I mean, wasn't that like done? It was already out in Japan and it took 4 years just to get localized or something?
No, it was like a 6 month delay. It was not that serious.
Okay, it felt like a terrible wait though.
All right, well, let's wrap this up by talking about the PC Gamer Conference. This was another first time presentation.
It was.
Slaggy, what do you think in hindsight?
I thought it was great. I thought that the presentation style, kind of like a talk show style, really made it stand out and it was a different experience. It gave people a chance to, you know, talk about their games and show their stuff, and, you know, it wasn't just like, hey, PlayStation Nation. It was like, you know, more like, here, there's, you know, the host and the people having a discussion rather than talking to the audience. Like, so that's why I say talk show sort of presentation. I think that it really was an effective way to present this information. Even when we had things that were doubled up, you know, like, you know, things like the Microsoft stuff that we already knew was from Xbone.
Yeah, absolutely. I actually feel pretty similar. I do think that it had some pacing issues. It had some issues where, like, they were literally showing games like Killing Floor 2 without, like, an announcement. It was just like, oh, this is a game that is available that we released recently. I hope you like it. So we needed more of, like, the announcements and, like, the new feature focus and, like, oh, this is our expansion. You already know about it, but let us tell you about a cool feature that's coming.
Right.
I think it needed more of that. But that having been said, as a first year presentation, I thought it was really well done. I thought it was great. And I'm really looking forward to next year's already.
Yeah.
Slaggy, what specific titles were you looking forward to from that?
Do you even have to ask me that?
Well, I just did.
What was the one you claimed that I was crying during it?
No, you legit were crying.
I may have gotten a little misty-eyed for, I keep wanting to call it, Roller Tycoon.
Coaster Planet?
Planet Coaster.
Whatever.
You know, and I also really appreciated seeing stuff that's not necessarily PC exclusive, but that we got a little more in-depth look at, like, Beyond Eyes, which I will still probably get, you know, on X-Bone, but still. Yeah. I would say Planet Coaster was the big one for me because I was not expecting it.
Yeah, I'm not surprised to hear that at all. Like, not even a little bit.
I mean, otherwise it's kind of hard because, like, a lot of stuff, there is a lot of overlap, and then, you know, some of the stuff that's just PC specific may not be my sort of thing, typically.
Yeah, that's understandable. For me, the big news was sort of the Killer Instinct port. I know I already have it on Xbox One, but for me, the big deal, because the Xbox One version and the PC version is going to have crossplay online. This is going to be a huge influx of new players playing online.
Yeah.
And that's something for
that's
me
good
that's,
for the health
that's
of
a
the
big
game.
Deal.
Oh, Heroes of the Storm, the Diablo-themed expansion. That
well, and
exciting.
That was the next thing I was going to say was that was the other big one for me. I've talked here about how much I love Heroes of the Storm, so I'm definitely super, super, super stoked for that. And Planet Coaster is a big one for me, too.
Planet Coaster, hey!
So, I want to mix it up just a little bit here and say, what would you like to see them change next year?
Tighten up the pacing a little bit. And like you said, just maybe show a little bit more, like, you know, like, oh, look at this new feature, and a little more, like, announcements. Have some more Big Bang moments, I guess.
Big Bang Theory?
Ew, no, I do not want the cast of Big Bang Theory to come out. Bazinga!
All right, so I already talked about what I'd like to see them change, so...
Oh my god, Zynga and Big Bang Theory announcing a Bazinga game.
Okay, so what is your letter grade for the PC Gaming Conference?
A minus.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to agree and go high. I'm gonna give them a B plus. Great first year effort. The pacing stuff, problematic, and it's hard for me to see how they couldn't have known that ahead of time. Like, you must have known that this was gonna drag and drag and drag. But overall, very impressed and very much looking forward to next year. So let's wrap this up overall, Slaggy, and let's keep this short because I'd really like to get this episode wrapped up.
Yes.
Overall, how would you say you felt about E3 2015?
P3 Persona 3 is always a good time.
E3 2015 with the benefit of hindsight.
Do I have to give it a letter grade?
We'll get there.
It was a good E3. It wasn't the one that wowed me the most in recent years, but there's definitely a lot of stuff I'm really excited about. And I would almost argue that I think it was better than last year's E3 in a lot of ways.
Well, that's awesome. That, to me, that sounds like a good takeaway. So for me, yeah, I'd probably give it like maybe a B plus.
Yeah, I was gonna say B, solid B.
Excellent.
Still qualifies for the honor roll, but you know, its parents might be like, could do better.
Excellent. Yeah, it was a good year. It was a good year.
By the way, you might want to rethink again if you ask me to give letter grades to things because I take the metaphor too far.
You take everything too far.
That's true.
An inevitability of working with you.
Yes.
Well, let's move on now and start the wrap up by talking about what's up.
I said, hey, what's going on?
This week, I played Spider-Man Unlimited on iOS. That is the Spider-Man Endless Runner. I'm really enamored with it to the point that I was playing it even while playing a pen and paper game yesterday. Hopefully my DM wasn't too mad about it. I still stayed invested in his game and was, like, participating.
No, you weren't trying to break my game.
But it's really cool. I like the way they handled the free-to-play stuff, and I'm definitely really into it. I'm also replaying the first Bayonetta on Wii U, because I never actually played the first Bayonetta on Wii U. I just skipped right to 2 unexpectedly.
Makes sense.
I'm really enjoying it. It actually seems like a really, really, really great and super competent port, not that I expected any less.
Mm-hmm.
I've been playing more Splatoon, which continues to be a revelation, really enjoying it. And I hopped back into Final Fantasy XIV.
Oh, Heavensward.
Today, alone, I played probably over 2 hours of just gold saucer bullshit nonsense.
Oh, that Final Fantasy VII hype, though.
And I loved it. Well, no, I just really wanted to play Triple Triad.
Oh, that Final Fantasy VIII hype, though.
So,
I wish there was Final Fantasy VIII hype.
Yeah, it's been a good week for me in gaming. Slaggy, what about you?
E3 was really busy, so, my gaming was mostly Smash this week. You know, really getting to spend some time with our boy Roy.
Excellent, excellent. Alright, well, with all that then, let's move over to our social stuff. Do we have any social links this week?
Yeah, we have a couple tweets.
Twiddly twiddly tweet, twiddly twiddly tweet.
Monarch Pyratica over on Twitter quoted me just saying, "I just pre-ordered you the Nintendo BD, the Nintendo Bidet." And then you had said, "Hopefully it plays a little jingle. It's a Mario theme because plumbing." So that was quoted from our episode. And then Monarch Pyratica captioned that with, "Shit, slag, kick, and spike point say, LMAO." Yep, that's us.
Yes.
Emiru69 says, "Preparing to move the chickens while listening to GameBuoy.org. Satisfying but quite surreal." And then a ton of chicken emoji, including little baby chicks.
Aww.
Because Emiru69 raises chickens and it's adorable.
Yeah, that is so cute.
And then Emiru69 also saying, "Remember when I said to GameBuoy.org that I was done with Amiibo? Well, I lied." The kind of like smirking
bum, bum, bum.
Emoji, double emoji. Splatoon girl, I'm sorry, Inkling girl, Luigi. It's the Splatoon 3 pack. And then Luigi and Toad from the Mario series. Well done.
Excellent.
That's it for our social links.
Awesome. Excellent. All right. Well, Slaggy, why don't you do our solicitations?
All right. We love your feedback. We like your Facebook likes. We like your iTunes subscriptions, ratings, and reviews. We fucking love Twitter. We tumble down to Google Plus, blah, 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 blah. We're available on Stitcher Radio. And you can get everything over at GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
All of our episodes, what is this, 85? Oh, my godness.
Holy cats.
Oh, my goddess. And you can mail us at MailBuoy@GameBuoy.org.
MailBuoy@GameBuoy.org.
Captain Spike, shout out.
My first shout out, as ever and always, goes out to VG Realness, serving up a weekly dose of gaming chit chat among friends, as well as the Game Over Takeover, your one stop shop to go to for geekery galore.
I just guessed it on their E3 episode.
Oh, superb. I'd be remiss not to mention Orange Lounge Radio, where every gamer has a voice, and from whom I steal ever so many of my cues. I'd also like you to check out the Nintendo Fun Club, your destination for platformers, positivity, and pop punk, as well as their sister show, Enos Lives, which is taking a look at all of your favorite PlayStation games, one game at a time. You should also check out the Nintendo Love Fest, which is what it says on the tin. They worked with VG Realness this week to do some fantastic E3 coverage. You should def check it out after you've checked out ours. as well as X Nation over at culturalwormhole.blogspot.com, an awesome podcast focusing on Marvel's Mighty Mutants. I have to shout out to Slag Kick's project, Reading is Fundamental, a look at RuPaul's Drag Race, featuring myself, Rob Roberts, from Orange Lounge Radio, as well as Delvin from VG Realness. You should also check out the Starboard Power Coupling podcast, a Star Trek podcast you hope doesn't fail, as well as Tables, Ladders, and Podcast, a professional wrestling podcast for the common man. Slaggy, why don't you take us to a game bar?
Game Bar is the gay video game Prairie Home Companion and a part of the Hunty Bunch, along with Koopa Club, the award-winning podcast about Nintendo and gaming with an LGBT twist. I put an extra B in there for Bussy, apparently. The award, I believe, is from their mothers. Over on the Voice of Geeks Network, along with many other great shows, including OLR and Starboard Power Coupling Podcast, you can listen to shows such as Girls Gone Wow, where you can get a female perspective on the world's most popular MMO, which I actually am going to hop back into with the new patch. And
Woo-hoo!
Horde House.
Wait, why are you going to do that? Do Final Fantasy, Jesus.
Final Fantasy 14 can't run on my laptop. and I need a new power supply for my desktop.
Well,
and Horde House, a place for all things gaming, but never too seriously. Over on the FistfulPotions.com website, you can check out the Multitap Podcast, which is a podcast discussion in the round about gaming then and now. And last but certainly not least, La Palanca Podcast, a podcast por y para gay gamers, Latino Americanos, en Español. As ever and always, our wonderful theme music was done by Zelda Reorchestrated, the project that aimed to reorchestrate beautiful Zelda music into gorgeous symphonic sound. They unfortunately closed their doors a while back and will forever be 40 out of 40 into the great fairy fountain.
All right. Well, with all that having been said, I want to thank you, our lovely and beautiful listeners, for staying tuned for yet another week of our bullshit.
Thank you, listeners. Hopefully, thank you, Africa.
Hopefully you have enjoyed listening as much as we've enjoyed talking, although that seems fairly unlikely. We'll be back with you as soon as we can for another episode of the GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
We have some exciting stuff in store for you over the next 15 episodes where we do our final dash up to episode 100.
Oh, boy.
Right? So hopefully you'll stick through it with us and get there with us so that we can all celebrate together. Until then, though, keep gaming.
Keep gaming.
Keep thinking.
Keep thinking.
And see you, Space Cowboy. Must be worried about your mortgage.
Worried about the mortgage, girl.
It's Jordan with a Y. It's a girl.
Is the Yoichi Wada thing so controversial, or just...
A lot of people have not liked Wada-san for a long time, so it's not controversial at all.
I'm just looking at the Yusika. I didn't know about the jiggly breasts. I'm like, oh wow, you had to go to GameRanks.com. Get news.
Yeah.
Oh my god. 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 Oh my god.
Monarch Piratica over. Oh yeah, Piratica. I said it right.
Bullshit.
Thank you, listeners.
Hopefully.
Thank you, Africa.
Alright, you ready to go?
Yes.